slides magically appeared. So it's me again. Thank you, organizers, for giving me this opportunity to start the workshop, even though it's still 6 a.m. in my time zone. So if I'm slightly incoherent, please forgive me. So let me start with a kind of quick apology for those of you in the audience who might have seen a version of this talk. I've been talking about this for quite some time, but we're very excited about some new experimental results that came out recently on these twisted bilayer cuprates, and that's why I decided to talk about this again on this forum. So what I will do, I will briefly review the basic idea behind twisted bilayer cuprates and what kind of physics we expect in this setting, and then I will discuss some of these new experimental results that are basically coming out of various labs as we speak. So I'll have to do this by hand. So there's quite a few people involved, and maybe I should press play. That's the key thing. In this work over the time, there's members of my group. This is a photo before pandemic. I was always proud of this photo because we went to a ski lodge just before pandemic, and this is when all these ideas were coming out. So two key players, Oz and Tarun, who's here. Then there's a bunch of other people from both our institute, UBC, and elsewhere, and a number of people that were involved in the experimental work, again, at our institute and other places as well. So here's the basic idea. There's many things that we don't know about high TC cuprates, even after 30 years of instant studies. But one thing that we know for sure is that these are D-wave superconductors. So the order parameter has this D-wave symmetry represented by a D-wave orbital. And something interesting happens when you try to combine two layers of such cuprate superconductor with D-wave symmetry with a twist. And I'm thinking now about large twist, unlike in graphene, where interesting things happen at very small twist angles, like around 1 degree. Here I'm thinking about 45 degree large twist. I'm thinking of combining these two. And as you can see in this situation, these two d orbitals of the order parameter are, so to speak, maximally frustrated. So where one of them in one layer is the order parameter is maximal, the other one is zero. And something interesting might happen in this frustrated situation. And what happens if you do the analysis is that the material, this bilayer, wants to spontaneously break time reversal symmetry and produce this new, you can call it new state of matter that we call a D plus ID superconductor. And this is, turns out, a fully gapped topological superconductor with spontaneously broken time reversal symmetry. And the way to think about it, if you focus on one layer, is that this orthogonal D order parameter from the other layer by tunneling imprints a subdominant order parameter, which causes this opening up of a full gap. And the logo of this talk might look something like this. And to summarize, what you expect to have is if for instance, you were make this twisted material in a geometry of a long strip, in the bulk, you would expect this fully gapped D-wave superconductor, but at the edges, you expect to have chiral edge modes that are topologically protected and move in this unidirectional way as indicated. So this work was motivated in part by what was going on in graphene and other van der Waals materials, where people were getting interesting results from thinking about twisted geometries, but also by this work, which came out in 2019, where after many, many years, people are actually able to isolate single monolayers of high TC superconductor, which actually were superconducting at high temperatures. And what you can see on this right panel, this is a comparison in critical temperatures, sorry, in resistivity as a function of temperature between bulk and monolayer BISCO. And you can see that the difference is very small. Basically, the monolayer here superconducts at a similar temperature as the bulk. This was very non-trivial to achieve because it turns out if you try to exfoliate single monolayer in air at ambient temperature, then whatever you exfoliate it just does not superconduct. You have to do this at very low temperature, minus 40 degrees Celsius, and in inert atmosphere, and in argon glove box. And this is difficult, as for instance, Ziliang, who is here, can attest, who tried this technique, and that's why it took so long for these to isolate. So anyway, thinking about twisted bilayers, therefore, is not just a fantasy that we entertain ourselves with. This can actually be done. And it turns out a single monolayer, if you know something about cuprates, already contains all the interesting phenomenology of the bulk high TC superconductor. For instance, there's this D-wave dome in critical temperature as a function of doping. There's this metal insulator transition, and all the phenomenology is already there in a single monolayer if you prepare it according to the correct recipe. Okay, so back to the bilayer. Let me just tell you a little bit more about this result. So this is the main result in pictures. If you make such a bilayer, according to theory at least, with a small twist angle, then basically what you get is two coupled D-wave superconductors, and the low energy spectrum of quasiparticles will be gapless. You will have Dirac node, two Dirac nodes in each quadrant of the Brillouin zone, basically coming each from each monolayer, and that's the result, nothing very dramatic. However, there's a critical angle. When you exceed that, the system wants to go into this time reversal symmetry broken phase, which, as I mentioned, is fully gapped. So these Dirac nodes actually open up a gap, and this is the fully gapped topological phase that we're after in this talk and in much of what we've been doing in this field. So this is a time reversal symmetry broken phase because the time reversal operation, as you know, involves a complex conjugation always, and whenever you have a non-trivial phase between the two order parameters, then time conjugation or complex conjugation gives you a different state. So it's like a ferromagnet where there's two states that are conjugate after time reversal symmetry. In this case, it would be d plus id prime and d minus id prime. So there's many different things you can actually address this theoretically, and we did many different calculations to support these outcomes. I will, in the interest of time, just show you the sort of simplest way that one can argue that this is what's going to happen, and this is based on just symmetries of the system and the Ginzburg-Landau theory, where already you can see this effect happening. So as is conventional, I write down here the Ginzburg-Landau theory for these two coupled monolayers. Each is described by a complex scalar order parameter, which is this psi 1, psi 2 field. And there's three different terms that I can write down to couple those two layers that are allowed by symmetries. They have coefficients A, B, and C here. And the interesting two terms are on the second line there with coefficients B and C. And as you can see, the those two terms will determine what is the relative phase between those two complex order parameters, okay? Because they depend on psi 1 and psi 2 star. The only other thing that one has to inject into this analysis that reflects the fact that these are D-wave superconductors is this property of the B coefficient, that it has to change sign upon 90 degree twist. And the simplest functional form that satisfies that is that it goes as cosine 2 theta, where theta is the twist angle. And from this, all actually follows. So one other assumption that I'd like to make is that these two superconducting layers are physically the same. So the order parameter amplitude is the same in them, but the two order parameters can differ by phase. And once I make that assumption, I end up with a free energy that you may call Josephson free energy in terms of just the relative phase between the two order parameters. And it's simply a competition of cosine phi and cosine 2 phi terms. This is basically high school physics. One can plot that free energy. Various curves here are for various twist angles. At small twist angle, there's blue curves. And as you would expect, the minimum is at zero phase difference between the two layers. However, the interesting thing is that as you start twisting, you move up in these curves towards red curves. There's a critical angle beyond which this cosine 2 theta term, sorry, cosine 2 phi term starts dominating, and you get a structure with two equivalent minima in your free energy, and that's the spontaneously time reversal broken phase. So already at this level, just from symmetries, you expect this phenomenon to occur. Now, yes. So the coefficient C is not required by symmetry to change sign or anything, right? And to leading approximation, one can take it as constant. If you do a microscopic calculation, it turns out it has a to leading order dependence that is constant plus cosine 2 theta, but that variation is actually small. So it's basically always positive. That's the important part. Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. What one can do, now various things. For instance, I can map out the position of this minima as a function of twist angle, and then I get a graph like this. So for small twist angles, the relative phase wants to be at zero. Then there's a critical angle at which I get a non-zero relative phase, and this red region then will be the spontaneously time reversal symmetry broken phase. I can add temperature to the mix. And if I make a plausible assumption about how the order parameter amplitude depends on temperature, then I can extract the phase diagram like this, where the vertical axis is now temperature, horizontal axis is the twist angle. And what I find is this wedge-shaped region in which I expect this time reversal broken phase to occur. The interesting thing is that at exactly 45 degree twist, this non-trivial phase extends all the way up to the native critical temperature of this material, which in BISCO is 90 Kelvin. So there is a possibility in these maximally twisted samples of having this topological superconductor at above liquid nitrogen temperature. And this is what excited us when we started thinking about this problem at the beginning. And basically, this is due to the fact that the tunneling between two layers is, in that limit, dominated by this second order process that goes as cosine 2 phi, which basically has these two non-equivalent minima at any temperature. Okay, so this was Ginzburg-Landau theory. One can write down microscopic theory. This is a simple BCS type approximation where I write a continuum BCS theory, and again, for simplicity, I assume just a regular a circular Fermi surface with a D-wave order parameter on top of it. The twist between the two layers is indicated here. The two order parameters are rotated by some angle, and this is nice because basically one can solve this by diagonalizing a 4x4 matrix in this for each layer. One has a 2x2 block and they are coupled in a simple way, and one can extract from this again this the phase between the two order parameters, and you can compare. The red line here is the analysis from the Ginzburg-Landau theory. Blue dots are coming from this simple BCS-like model, and they are basically lying on top of one another as you would expect. Of course, we've chosen the parameters such that the critical angles match. That's put in by hand, but other than that, everything else just comes out without any extra effort. What this allows us to read off is also the spectral gap, which is these orange dots. And you can see that at least in this very simple model, one expects to have a fairly large gap opening up at 45 degrees up to 20 MeV, which is a good fraction of the maximum gap in these cuprates, which is around 45-50 MeV. So this all looks kind of promising. Yes. Yes. Yeah. This is of course an important question. The simplest model, you make this assumption that it's independent of momentum. Then you look back and you find that there's a voluminous literature of how exactly the electrons tunnel between layers in cuprates, and if you follow this literature, you find that the most accepted model is that of so-called incoherent tunneling, where the dominant process actually involves some disorder in the layers that are between the copper oxygen layers. So that makes the model somewhat more complicated. And we've worked out that situation as well. What happens in that situation is that the effect persists, but this spectral gap that I indicated here is diminished by, you know, potentially a large amount. And how large a gap remains, that's a kind of open question, which I think will... Yeah. Yeah. So what you talking about is the so-called coherent tunneling models, and there you would have to add some angular dependence to that G. Turns out that model is not in a good agreement with measured physical properties such as C-axis penetration depth. It predicts different temperature dependencies that are actually observed. And so for that reason, people introduced this incoherent tunneling model where basically momentum is only partially conserved when you tunnel between the layers and that model actually gives a reasonable agreement with experimental data. So we worked out this very simple model, and then we went to this incoherent tunneling model. I have a few slides on that, which I wasn't planning to show, but yeah, we can discuss. Yeah, as everything in cuprates, once you start looking into details, they are less simple than you would like. Okay, so I was talking about topology, so let me devote one slide to that. basically, it was known from older literature. People like Bob Laughlin actually were talking about the D+ID superconductor as a possible model of actually native untwisted cuprates, and that didn't quite pan out. But from that theoretical work in the early 2000s, we know that this is a topological superconductor. And so what happens is that if you put this on a strip, you have a fully gapped bulk, and you have these chiral edge modes that are topologically protected, and their direction depends on whether it's a D+ID or D-ID. So these arrows would reverse if I went to the other state. And indeed, you can do a calculation within, now this is a lattice version of that microscopic model. So you set up a strip, and then what I'm showing here is a spectral function calculated in the bulk of that strip. And you can see that the system is nicely gapped. Around zero energy, there is no none of these light bands, which would represent excitations. However, when I look at the edge, calculate a spectral function at the edge, I see these right moving modes. There's four of them consistent with the churn number four that you would expect for two layers of a D+ID superconductor according to these old calculations. And if I do the same thing for the opposite edge, I find four edge modes moving in the opposite direction. I can also calculate the full spectrum averaged over the whole system. Now I see all of those edge modes. So indeed, this picture of a fully gapped superconductor with edge modes is accurate for at least within these simple models. Here's just very quickly, just to illustrate some work that we did on this. One can put this on a lattice, and once you have actual lattice model, you can introduce more realistic looking Fermi surfaces for BISCO. In this situation, of course, you have to work only with commensurate twists, meaning twist angles which actually give you a periodic lattice. Otherwise, this is you cannot diagonalize these models. But we have done all that, and basically the outcome is that these more detailed calculations confirm what we would find from a simple model. This is work of Tarun, who sits here in the audience. You can calculate these edge modes on a strip using these lattice models, and you know the details look different, but the number, the topology, is exactly as before. Here's some prediction for tunneling conductance in the bulk. It should be visible. The gap should be visible at low energy using either tunneling spectroscopy or angle resolved photoemission in this time reversal symmetry broken phase. So sometimes people ask me, is there anything similar to graphene that happens in this system at small twist angles? And the answer is yes. There is also interesting physics at small twist angle. There's something like a magic angle in graphene in these cuprates, although symmetries of this problem are different. So instead of getting these famous flat bands, what happens in at small angles is that you have a collision of two Dirac nodes, which merge into a quadratic band crossing. And here's a kind of illustration of that at the specific magic angle, which again, we don't know exactly what it is, depends on parameters, but it's on the order of few degrees. One should have this kind of situation. And this is interesting, similar to graphene, interactions become important because they become marginal at the quadratic band crossing, whereas they are irrelevant at a Dirac point. So the prediction is that if you have some interactions, residual interaction between these quasi-particles that are not already accounted for in the BCS theory, then you're likely to have instabilities around this magic angle, and what exactly this instability would be. Again, depends on what are the dominant interactions, but if you assume, for instance, that you have a small subdominant attraction in S-wave channel that does not lead to any instability in the untwisted sample, then it turns out near this magic angle, you can have a subdominant S-wave order parameter and go into this T-broken D plus IS state at low temperature. So there's interesting physics similar to graphene, but it might be more difficult to see than this D plus ID phase that happens at large twist angle. Okay, so let me now turn to experimental efforts. Just as, well, about 2 days after I gave a first talk on this theoretical prediction, I got a phone call from Philip Kim at Harvard, who said, oh, you know, we're actually doing this experiment. They were doing it independently for different reasons, but they basically used this technique to produce very thin flakes of BISCO and measure transport between two flakes in this twisted geometry. And they already had lots of data and were trying to understand them, so we started talking. And let me just tell you a couple highlights about these experiments. So the basic prediction that, and this was known for many years, was that simply because of this D-wave order parameter, when you have this twisted junction, you should see a critical current through that junction going as cosine of 2 theta, where theta is again a twist angle. Interestingly, this was never seen in cuprates. People have done this experiment many times, and they always saw critical current that was basically constant, independent of angle. And this was initially interpreted as evidence for S-wave superconductivity, but then at some point, there was so much evidence for D-wave from other experiments that this had to be abandoned, but it was still a mystery why one doesn't see this characteristic cosine 2 theta behavior. Okay? Now I think we know, Philip tells me, that basically this is the effect of surface degradation. If you try to make these samples in air at ambient temperature, you cleave, and in few seconds the surface oxidizes, becomes non-superconducting, and loses all memory of its D-wave order parameter. And that's why those old experiments would just not be sensitive to this twist. So for the first time, what Philip saw in, or his postdoc, saw this behavior, the data here follow roughly this cosine 2 theta behavior, and this is as you would expect. So this is nice. they also saw some very interesting non-monotonic behavior as a function of temperature of this critical current. So at zero twist angle, critical current just goes down like this, as you would expect, according to Ambegal-Karbaratov theory, which was again developed back many years ago. However, at intermediate twist angles, you would see critical current to actually increase with temperature initially. And this is kind of unusual behavior. You would not expect that, because as you increase temperature, that leads to pair breaking, and you would expect normally critical current to just go down. So we helped them to understand this. Actually, it's a straightforward consequence of having this twisted 2 D-wave superconductors, and there's some frustration at low temperature because of this twist, which gets actually relieved as you increase temperature, so we can model that quite successfully. However, this does not have any bearing on this spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking. We kept asking them this question: do you see any evidence for the spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking near 45 degrees? And it turns out that it's not so easy to observe from just a transport experiment. The closest result that they have to this that can be interpreted as a presence of time reversal symmetry breaking is in Shapiro steps. So Shapiro steps occur when you irradiate Josephson junction with radio frequency signal, and then you see these steps at integer multiples of basically frequency in the right units. Notice these bright bands at integer values. Now, notice also in this picture that there's some bright bands here at half integer values, and that's unusual and can be interpreted as a signature of the second harmonic in the tunneling between the two layers. So again, Tarun has done some modeling, and basically you can assume either conventional free energy like this blue line with one minimum, or unconventional with two minima, and do modeling for this type of Shapiro physics. And here's what you find. I apologize, this is now rotated by 90 degrees compared to that. So these bands are horizontal as opposed to vertical. But you can see these bands at integer values of frequency in the conventional regime of small twist angle. However, near 45 degrees, you start seeing these half integer steps, just like in the experiment. So the Shapiro step experiment, again, is not a smoking gun experiment for spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking. However, it tells us that there's a significant second harmonic in the free energy of those samples, as you would expect on the basis of this theory. More recently, they analyzed their data for the so-called superconducting or Josephson diode effect. And this is an interesting effect that people have been talking about recently in different materials. Basically, Josephson diode effect is when critical current of a junction is non-reciprocal, meaning when you it's illustrated here in this inset. So you have a Josephson junction, and you can drive current in one or the other direction. And normally, you would expect the critical current in two directions to be the same, right? However, this is not the case always. And you can have a situation when the critical current in two directions is actually different, denoted as AC plus and IC minus. And this is what is observed in some materials, including, turns out, these Josephson junctions of twisted BISCO in Philip Kim's lab. And very easily, you can demonstrate that in order for this happens, a necessary condition for this to happen is that the system has both broken time reversal symmetry and inversion symmetry. If any of these symmetries is present, you can immediately show that the two currents have to be the same. Okay? And this is just because current is odd under either time reversal or inversion. And so if the current I flows in this way, then it has to flow in the opposite way as well under those symmetries. So the fact that they observe this effect in Josephson junctions twisted near 45 degrees shows that there is a time reversal symmetry breaking there. So that can be viewed as a smoking gun experiment for this physics, although again, nothing is as simple as we would like that. There is some interesting dynamics associated with this, which we don't fully understand. We're kind of working on it. That's a current project. We don't have all the answers, but at a sort of gross level, it is clear that time reversal symmetry must be broken in these junctions near 45 degree twist in agreement with our prediction. Just 2 weeks ago, now it's almost 3 weeks ago, October 20, there came an independent paper by a group in India where they reported on the same effect. They report, if you just read the title, High Temperature Superconducting Diode, they take these twisted Bisco flakes also and report a significant Josephson diode effect up to something like 50% asymmetry. So what they plot here is this asymmetry factor, which is basically the difference in the two currents divided by their sum, and the asymmetry factor of 50% is considered very large. So this is at low temperatures, it goes up to 50%. In their case, it's controlled by magnetic field. But if you look at, so this is a function of magnetic field, asymmetry factor. If you look near zero, there's a pronounced hysteresis. And that shows that there is spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking, which persists at zero magnetic field. So the kind of independent confirmation, this diode effect appears to exist. And so far, I would say this is the clearest clearest indication that this physics occurs. What are these graphs here? Well, this is basically the rectification of a current in such a Josephson diode. In this case, rectification of voltage. So basically, they apply this type of current to the junction, which is both positive and negative, but voltage only appears for on the negative side, right? So that's the rectification effect. And you can see here that it's repeatable, persistent, and what is demonstrated here, it can be tuned by applied magnetic field. So if you apply magnetic field on the junction in the opposite direction, where the voltage is positive and where it's negative flips, so the junction can be trained, again, indicative of some spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking in the junction that you can actually bias by applied magnetic field. Okay, so here's a parallel effort which is going on at our institute. This is Ziliang, who's the next speaker, although his talk will be on a different topic. So he also managed to master this technique of making very clean thin flakes in our institute. And the plan is to look for spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking by looking at optical Kerr signal, which is a kind of independent probe of a time reversal symmetry breaking. In Ziliang's lab, they managed to make these twisted flakes with fairly high critical temperatures in this glove box at low temperature. I understand it's a difficult process, and they are in the process of finalizing and fine-tuning their apparatus to actually look at spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking. In support of this effort and in collaboration with Catherine Callan, we did some calculations to understand the amplitude of this Kerr signal, which is a rotation of polarization upon reflection from time reversal symmetry broken phase. And just very shortly, let me just say that compared to the other material where people were looking for this kind of signal, which is strontium ruthenate, that was supposed to be a P plus IP chiral superconductor, although today it's not clear that it is that. In a D plus ID superconductor, specifically for parameters relevant to BISCO, we find that this Kerr signal should be 3 to 4 orders of magnitude larger. So it should be relatively easily observable, basically because all the energy scales are larger. This is a high temperature superconductor, the gap is larger, the band structure is such that this should be a relatively simple measurement. I think I'm almost running out of time, but let me just quickly tell you about one project, just one extra slide. So are there Majorana fermions somewhere in this? People were talking about Majorana fermions all the time. So short answer is no, not in the simple bilayer as I discussed. The Chern numbers here are always even, and that precludes basically the existence of isolated Majorana fermions. They always come in pairs, and so that's less interesting. However, there is one geometry that one can actually contemplate. If you were to take this twisted bilayer and put it on top of something with strong spin-orbit coupling, like a strong topological insulator, it turns out that the combination of the two materials would give a Majorana zero mode, for instance, in a vortex in this superconductor, and you know, that's a kind of corollary of this classic Fouquet construction. Also, my postdoc Benjamin had this idea where one could apply very similar idea to a different system. This is the so-called spin triplet valley singlet superconductors, and some of the graphene multilayers are thought to be in this class. So if you take a Bernal bilayer graphene or rhombohedral trilayer graphene or this zirconium nitride chloride, they are thought to have, they are all triangular symmetry materials and have strong spin orbit, have either strong spin orbit coupling or have spontaneously time reversal broken normal states such that they have small Fermi surfaces at a corner of the Brillouin zone. And these materials also go superconducting in some part of their phase diagram. It is thought that the superconductivity has an F-wave symmetry, which is this spin triplet valley singlet superconductivity. And the idea then is the following. You can play the same game. You can take one such fully gapped superconductor, one layer of it, combine it with another layer that is, in this case, twisted by 30 degrees, which is a maximal twist in that situation. The order parameter would get maximally frustrated in this geometry as well. And in addition, you would have just one single Fermi surface that arises from merging of these small Fermi surfaces near the corner of the Brillouin zone. And this, we predict, is going to be now F plus IF prime chiral superconductor. And this will actually have a Majorana zero modes because it has odd Chern numbers from this type of geometry. Fairly complicated phase diagram, but again, near this maximal twist, this light blue phase is the one that is interesting. That is a non-abelian topological superconductor. So this is the kind of newest idea that we've been pursuing. And this would be a topological superconductor with an odd number of Majorana fermions on its edge and isolated Majorana zero modes in a vortex core. Okay, and this brings me to my final slide, and I think I'm still within the time limit. Thank you very much. Yes. So initially, we thought this would not be an issue. So graphene is a single monolayer, right? So you expect that doesn't have that much rigidity. If you look at a single monolayer of a cuprate, that's a much thicker stack because you have a copper oxygen and bismuth oxide layer. So we expect these monolayers to be themselves much stiffer than graphene. So we initially didn't worry about this. our experimental colleagues actually performed some detailed TEM measurements trying to address that. And they concluded that there are some variation of the angle, but they are below 0.2 degrees locally. So that's a very small variation. And in terms of this theory, it would not affect anything because we don't need to tune this angle that precisely. Thank you for that question. Ah, how do you detect the edge state? So that's a difficult question. Edge states are notoriously hard to detect in superconductors, right? Because they carry quantized heat current, but they don't carry quantized electrical current. So the easiest way to detect the topological phase would be to measure the bulk gap, right? Imagine you could look at the spectrum locally by something like STM. You would compare various samples at various twists. You should see a gapless superconductor at small twist, and then suddenly you should see gap opening up. That, of course, does not prove it's topological. You would like to see something at the edge. In principle, you could observe edge modes by, again, something like local probe, STM, but this is not that easy because you simply see some increased density of states at the edge. The absolute smoking gun experiment would be to see quantized thermal conductance. But when I talk to my colleagues, they tell me this is a extremely hard experiment, right? Seeing quantized electrical conductance is relatively easy, has been done many times. Thermal conductance, much, much harder. So, but yeah. Pardon me? Yeah, you have phonons. You have to go to very small temperatures to freeze out phonons. Once you have those very small temperatures, it's very hard to measure thermal conductance because, yeah, you're at very low temperature. So, yeah. That's another point. So it has been tried in some spin liquid candidates, right? And it's controversial to this day whether it is quantized or not. Yes. So in the continuum model, that's the advantage. You don't have to worry about the Brillouin zone, right? You have a sort of long wavelength expression, and you have circular Fermi surface, so you can do arbitrary twist. You can worry about the validity of those calculations, and that's exactly why we always check against lattice calculation, where we can address a series of commensurate twist angles, and we always compare. Do they give the same prediction? And they do. So we're confident that the continuum description works in this way. Can you repeat your question? I didn't quite hear you. Okay. I imagine this is possible. We haven't done that. We simply used a standard mean field theory, and the reason behind this, the reason why we think this is sufficient is the following. We're thinking about two well-formed D-wave superconductors. And the only degree of freedom that we're interested in addressing is the relative phase of the two order parameters, right? So this should not be a very delicate question. This simply is something that, you know, is a free degree of freedom and can be obtained by simply minimizing the free energy of the superconductor. Now, of course, this sweeps under the rug the question, you know, where does D-wave superconductivity come from in a single monolayer? But quite frankly, I don't want to answer that question because people tried to answer it for 30 years and are still arguing about that. So I think the answer to your question is yes, in principle, but I didn't feel it was necessary to go into that direction.